Ladies and gentlemen, hello, and welcome to another edition of the 205 Live NXT Recap Show right here on FightfulSelect.com. I am your host, your guide, your accompaniment, Mr. Warren Hayes. Thank you very much for coming over and checking it out this week right here on FightfulSelect.com. You lucky members who get all these fantastic members only podcasts, which means that people who are not members do not get to see them. A lot of new stuff going around here. I'm sure you've checked out Steven Jensen taking over the Weekender Report from your boy Sean Ross Sapp, but it's not because Sean is slacking off. Not because Sean has decided to kick up his heels and put on his best slippers, perhaps, you know, slip into his most comfortable peignoir. Light himself up a pipe next to the fireplace. No. Sean has actually, he's started doing the Weekender Report. That's also available on Fightful Select. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he posted an episode just today. Yes, he posted an episode of the Fightful Report podcast today, Wednesday, December 5th. You should go check that out. You always know there's all sorts of goodies. There's all sorts of goodies available. It's fantastic. Fightful Select, it's the place to be. And if you're watching this right now, that's fantastic, and I appreciate it. I'm really, really glad, and I'm thrilled, actually, that you're here. However, you know, you could also be watching this live because there are people who are watching this live right now. I've got John, I've got Tim in the chat. How you doing, fellas? You guys should come and join as well if you ever had a chance. I do this weekly. I do this every week right after NXT. Sometimes I might even do it after NXT UK. You never know. But as it stands right now, WWE has been giving us back-to-back episodes of NXT UK. So that means that I'm going to be doing another show right here on Fightful Select again this week, covering the two episodes of NXT UK. I'm going to be doing that tomorrow, Thursday, 8 p.m. sharp, 8 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to be there. It's a fun time. And NXT UK, it's worth it. It's not that I don't want to do 2 hours, an extra 2 hours for you guys. I love this. This is a lot of fun. It's a good way to show that I appreciate you guys supporting Fightful this way. I don't mind putting in the extra effort. Because otherwise, what? I cram in 4 hours of programming into one hour? I could do that. I wouldn't have fun doing it. You probably wouldn't enjoy it either. And we've got Cyborg in the chat now. Oh, things are cooking now. Things are cooking this evening. Welcome, Cyborg. All right, let's go right to it then. Right after I take a quick drink. I am parched for some bizarre reason. And let's go right ahead with 205 Live tonight. Starting off with the Brian Kendrick is much more dismissive. You know, it's like, oh, it's just the Brian Kendrick. But if you say, oh, it's the Brian Kendrick, you can't go like, you can't be so dismissive. There's a certain amount of importance that's attached to that inflection when you do a the instead of a the. Just saying. It's Diet 7-Up, by the way. This is something that John is always checking up on me. John in the chat, he's always checking up to make sure that I'm not drinking on the job, and I don't. I never do. Don't drink alcohol when I do this. John, it's Diet 7-Up. Why is it diet? I don't know. My girlfriend bought the pop this week, so. All right, so Brian Kendrick and Drew Gulak, this is their ongoing feud ever since Gulak and Jack Gallagher kicked Brian Kendrick out of their little trio a couple of months ago now. And since Brian Kendrick has taken a liking to Akira Tozawa, they've started teaming up. So there's some back and forth to begin with between both guys. There's some grappling going on as well. Gulak mostly on top, and he's... he's mostly on top. He's releasing moves, you know, sort of being a little arrogant, working out of arm locks, But finally, Gulak takes Kendrick down with a clothesline. An early attempt at the Gulak, which is blocked. Gulak. Faithful viewers will know. I think it's a stupid name for a dragon sleeper. I get what they're doing. It's a play on words with his name. Still doesn't make it fun or funny or fun to pronounce. Gulak. Anyway. But Gulak starts working the legs with the submissions then. He gets an ankle lock in with putting his knee to the back of Brian Kendrick. And he gets a leg lock in, pulling back on the head as well. Then he does a leg whip that where he lands, he has Kendrick land right on his ankle. He covers him, but only gets two. Kendrick then gets a full Nelson in on Drew Gulak. Full Nelsons these days in modern wrestling, you don't see much of those. So I thought this was pretty cool. Double underhook suplex by Kendrick into a bridge. Covers, of course, because it's a bridge. Warren only gets two, though. Gulak gets a powerbomb into a cover as well for two. And then he transitions immediately into a single leg crab. That was really, really nicely done. He transitions then into a leg bar. And again, I can't point this out enough. I like it when submission holds get transitioned into other submission holds. It makes for a little more authenticity, keeps me in it. Because if you're trying to put on a submission and your opponent isn't giving up, you know, you're obviously he's or she is resisting. And wouldn't the logical thing be to just try something else? Of course it is. Of course it is. So he transitions into the leg bar. There's a jumping heel kick by Brian Kendrick. He goes after Gulak, but Gulak slides into another leg submission. So he's got Kendrick then on the mat again. Kendrick is trying to reach out for the ropes, but Drew grabs his arm and, as he's trying to position himself, he puts Kendrick's arm in his mouth to make sure he doesn't grab the ropes while he's cinching the hold in. I thought that was pretty cool. But eventually, Kendrick does reach the ropes for the break. A scoop slam followed by a diving elbow by Gulak covers Kendrick, but only gets two. Reverse chin lock by Gulak, who battles back up to his feet. Kendrick battles back up to his feet. Then both guys start trading strikes. And finally, Gulak is taken down. Kendrick covers, but only gets two. He gets the captain's hook on Drew, but he reaches the bottom rope. But Kendrick still holds on a little longer than this. But Gulak is able to transition into a dragon suplex, which goes into a pin, and Kendrick kicks out a 2.9. No, it's Kendrick that hits the dragon suplex, and Gulak kicks out a 2.9. That's okay. I think I might need a little more, just a little more of this here. Kendrick flings Gulak to the outside, and Kendrick goes after him. He tosses Gulak back in the ring, which allows then Gallagher to go after Tozawa. This distracts Kendrick in the ring. Gulak rolls him up for two, but Kendrick is able to reverse his fortunes, gets a sliced bread in, sliced bread number two, covers, and that would have been a three count had it not been for Gallagher running in to break up the pin. Kendrick then tries to fight off both Gallagher and Gulak, but Gulak gets the Gulak in on him. Tozawa tries to jump in to help his partner, but Gentleman Jack makes short work of him. And the heels stand tall after this one. So we are not done with this feud yet, folks. We are not done. It was a nice opening match. Very solid work from both guys. Nothing to complain about. Nothing to write home about either. But on the standard level, the usual bar that is established for 205 Live's opening matches. Buddy Murphy is backstage with Drake Maverick. Drake Maverick, who flips between being a GM and an interviewer. He's saying, you know, Buddy Murphy, 2018 has been a great year for you, hasn't it? Your rise from obscurity to becoming WWE Cruiserweight Champion. But, you know, you're also a very polarizing figure, and you'll be facing Cedric Alexander again. And this time, you know, it'll be different. There's no home field advantage. Buddy Murphy says, you know, he's okay with that. It took two of them to beat him last week, two of them being Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander in their tag team match last week. He has an idea, and he says, you know, if Cedric is raring to go and so am I, why don't we both have a fight next week, one against a different opponent, and, you know, Drake Maverick can pick these opponents. How about that, Drake? Do you think it's a good idea, or is it too polarizing? Oh, he didn't care for that. You know, we're heading towards the end of the year, right? This is the time of year where all wrestling commentators, wrestling journalists, pundits, they all get together or each separately on their own ways. And we start talking about match of the year and wrestler of the year, male, female, tag team of the year, match of the year, so on and so forth. And I like doing these things to a certain degree. I mostly like to point out things that have been out of the ordinary, wrestlers that have come across as special, something unique that happened throughout the year. And you have to say, you have to absolutely say, when Drake Maverick here says, 2018 was your year, wasn't it, buddy? Yes. Yes, it was his year. Because not only, get to think back just a wee bit here. Buddy Murphy was a guy who was floundering in NXT. He hadn't been on television for a while now. And all the reports that I've heard, everything that Sean Ross Sapp has been talking about, you know, on various reports, various podcasts, Buddy Murphy fought and his way to get onto 205 Live, to have a spot there. He wanted to wrestle. He wanted to compete. People were against it, but he insisted. They finally gave him a shot. And man, he has been one of the driving forces of that division this year. This is a division, let's not forget, that has had so many stop-go moments over the past 18 months or 2 years. With Neville leaving, with Enzo being fired. You finally felt this year that 205 Live finally had a direction, had a way to go. And Buddy Murphy was one of the reasons it was so, so successful this year. Because he brought his all the time. Not to say that guys like Mustafa Ali or Drew Gulak or even Leo Rush have not contributed to the success that this brand has had, or the, should we call it success? Let's say the reestablishment of this brand, the creation of 205 Live as we know it now. They've had integral parts in this. Kalisto as well. But Murphy has been special. He's been on another level. He's been on another plane. He deserves everything he got this year. He's worked hard for it. So yes, definitely 2018 has been his year. John says, what about Tony Abs? Tony Nese, listen, we're going to move on. We still have a couple of weeks to talk about end of year stuff. But Tony Nese for me, Tony Nese has a very special place in my heart as well, but for other reasons. We have a Mustafa Ali promo. It's a bit of his run-of-the-mill promo where he says, you know, I get kicked down, but I get back up. And at some point, he's going to have to stay up. Then, there we go. Okay. And then, we have set. I just want to point this out before we go forward. I'm not sure as much as I just lauded Buddy Murphy, I'm not sure that I'm entirely behind the idea of putting Cedric Alexander back in the title picture so soon. It feels like it's been that it's a missed opportunity to elevate someone else. And Mustafa Ali is a credible championship contender. That's fine. I think Drew Gulak is as well, but it would have been a good idea to bring someone up. Now, unless they're going full on storyline with this and that they're going to swerve something for us, it's a little strange. Cedric Alexander is not a bad worker. Not at all. He can get it done. He's a great wrestler. He's fantastic to look at. But again, faithful viewers will know that I think he's a little on the beige side when it comes to his character work. He lacks a little spark. He lacks a little pizzazz. He's not as complete a package as a guy like Buddy Murphy is, where not only is he a fantastic athlete, a great worker, but you understand his character. You know where he's coming from, and he has a very natural charisma about him. Cedric is very milquetoast in a certain way. He's very bland. He's very average, and his character work hasn't evolved. And I was ready for the era of Alexander to end at Super Showdown. I was ready a couple of months before that. I thought that I really thought that they were going to drop the Cedric was going to drop his title to Drew Gulak at SummerSlam, but they didn't do that. It's fine, but he did eventually drop the strap, and they're talking about this being his redemption story. You know, the commentary mentioned this a couple of times during the show. It's too early for a redemption story. He lost two matches. He lost two matches after losing the Cruiserweight Championship, and then he wins a couple more, and then it's a redemption story. No, that's not what it is. A redemption story would have him really touch rock bottom. That would have made a really compelling story. Like, he can't get a win. It just can't happen. He beat Leo Rush. He beat, he won his tag team match last week. You know, he's on an upswing, but he hasn't been down in the dumps enough to call this a redemption story. And that, if that's what they wanted to do with him, I would have been 100% behind it. But he really should have hit rock bottom first so that we can to really feel sympathy for him. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. John says, or are we seeing an Ali turn? Maybe, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it'd be surprising. Like, you never know. But right now, Mustafa Ali's character is all about inclusiveness and positivity. The stuff that he does on social media is so fantastic. I don't see Mustafa Ali turning, or if they do, it'll be strange. And again, in this context, I don't see how. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Showcase match for Arya Daivari, which, again, glad to see him back. It's always good to see guys and gals back from big injuries like that. But got to be honest here, not much of a showcase match this was. Basically just him hitting big lariats on Clay Roberts until Charles Robinson, Little Nate, calls the match. Wasn't much here as well. We also get a Cedric Alexander promo where he reacts to Murphy's comments. He says Cedric says that Ali is in his, he better be careful to not come into his shadow too much. He's trying, you know, teasing a heel turn, but he says, no, I'm not. Buddy Murphy he's pulling third grade mind games if he thinks I'm going to turn on my friend, and he accepts Murphy's challenge for next week, which actually is going to turn out to be Noam Dar versus Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander versus Tony Nese next week. So that's a nice little package of a card there. We're going to have a good time. Looking forward to Dar versus Murphy. Should be fun. Our main event, Kalisto and Lince Dorado of the Lucha House Party versus Mike Kanellis and TJP in a tornado tag team match. I like me some tornado tag team matches with the cruiserweights. But I have to say, I'm going to be upfront and honest about this one. This kind of underwhelmed me. And this is not something I say often when talking about 205 Live. Lucha House Party is out here without Grand Metalik, but they have the piñatas, and they also have a Santa bag full of goodies, and they're giving goodies out to the kids. So the bell rings, and Lucha House Party go right after the heels. Of course, tornado tag rules. So as opposed to Lucha House rules, this one basically means that there's no tagging in and out. It's all four guys in the ring at once, all the time. TJP gets tossed out, and Mike Kanellis eats the Lucha Tower straight off the bat, followed by Lindsay's body drop, you know, his log drop. The Luchadors hit a pop-up drop kick, Lindsay popping Kalisto up into the air, who drop kicks TJP out to the outside. Lindsay with a huge crossbody from the post to the outside on both Kanellis and Hill and TJP. That was cool. Then they go for, Kalisto goes for the bag of goodies. Why is he going for the bag of goodies? Well, because that's where they hid the noisemakers. Springboard DDT by Kalisto on TJP covers him, but only gets two. Kanellis with a spine buster on Lindsay to the floor on the outside. That was nasty. Maria then starts fooling around with one of the piñatas and distracts Kalisto with it. I don't know why. It doesn't matter. They're just piñatas. She distracts him by stomping it into the ground. TJP kicks Kalisto to the mat because he's distracted, because he's stupid to be distracted by a piñata that, I don't know. Kanellis then, one thing I did find funny is Kanellis brings the remains of that piñata into the ring, and he brings it into the ring, and he beheads it. He just kicks the head off of it, which was really funny. And then people start booing. It's like, boo, boo, they're smashing the piñatas. That's what piñatas are for! What's wrong with you people? If you were at a birthday party, everyone would be like, yay! Why are you booing when the heels are smashing the piñatas? They're revealing all the goody treasures on the inside. People sometimes. There's a single leg takedown by TJP, and Kanellis follows in with an elbow drop. That was a nice, I think, one of the only moments of double team offense that they did during the evening, during the match, which was, the match happened during the evening, so I'm not entirely wrong either. Kanellis interrupts Kalisto, who was going to jump off the barricade. He trips him up, and he hits the barricade so hard that the barricade padding falls off. Lindsay battles back with a golden rewind on both heels. I'm a sucker for the golden rewind. It looks really good. Kalisto with a crossbody from the top rope onto TJP. He goes for a Rana, but TJP blocks it, and instead Kalisto eats an STF. Cameras, and this is sad. So this is sad because the cameras missed Kanellis hitting a side Russian leg sweep on Lindsay off the apron to the ground. And the cameras missed it. They had to show it in replay. You know, you can forget. When I say we, I mean I, but us. We can all do that. We can forgive indie promotions with limited means to miss out on some spots because there's maybe two guys with DSLRs running around trying to catch all the action. But for WWE to miss a cue like this with the production value they have? No. That kind of thing is inexcusable. He did a side Russian leg sweep off the apron to the floor. That's something you don't... by the way, we're going to show you this on replay because... No. Can't believe that. We'll head on a little later on into the match here. At some point, Lindsay hits his trifecta of moonsaults. You know, the moonsaults from every rope, first, second, third top rope moonsault. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that the first rope moonsault from a novice's, as someone who has never wrestled a lick in his life, seems to me that the first rope moonsault would be probably the most difficult one to land, right? Because it's so close to the ground nonetheless. I don't know, man. But it's still cool. I love the triple moonsaults. They do the trifecta of and then the luchadors look at each other. They start talking in Spanish. They start pushing each other, and they're talking in Spanish. And then you understand that they're doing a tribute to the Dudleys, where basically Lindsay tells Kalisto, get the tables, but it's actually Kalisto, get the bag or the piñatas. I don't speak Spanish, but Kalisto goes to the outside, grabs the bag, brings it in, and it's filled with mini piñatas. Okay. They're all around the ring now. Well, not around the ring, but they're in the ring. TJP and Lindsay try to drop each other onto the piñatas. Some top rope shenanigans ensue, and eventually there's a double superplex by Lucha House Party on TJP, who lands on the piñatas and acts as if he's landed on some thumbtacks. So I'm like, oh, maybe the piñatas are filled with thumbtacks. And I said, wow, this has gotten hardcore quickly. But no, he just landed. TJP landed on essentially little blocks of paper mache. Like, that is, it doesn't hurt that much. And then the ending follows soon thereafter that, where they get Penelope, the other piñata, involved. TJP gets it, and Kalisto grabs it, but Maria Kanellis is on the apron and she's squealing. She says, I want the piñata. And then Kalisto throws it in her face. And there was a lot of silliness involved here at the end that I don't quite get. The match ends with a Salina del Sol on TJP. The Salina del Sol is hit while kicking Mike Kanellis, who's on the apron, kicking him in the face. Shooting star press by Lindsay Dorado gets the pin. This, I could have done without. Okay, let me start over. Hi, welcome to the NXT. No, I'm kidding. With all the nonsense that they've been doing with the Lucha House Party on Raw, I kind of like coming back to Lucha House Party on 205 Live, because, you know, then they come back to their competitive mode kind of thing. You know, yes, they're energetic and colorful. They do the hand signs and it's over. You know, people react to it. But now it seems like they brought the silliness over, and I'm not okay with that. Because this was the piñatas in the ring, the distractions with the Penelope that played such a big part in the ending. This is not 205 Live. This is not part of the pure wrestling brand that they have been building since Enzo left. You know, there were long promos when Enzo was around. There were lots of goofy characters, and they had started all putting that away, giving us some competition. Drew Gulak was, you know, he had picket signs and was a politician type. Then all of a sudden he drops most of his gimmick to become much more serious, and we buy into that. This kind of silliness didn't have its place. And for me, it really took me out of the match. It really took me out of the match, even before they got the mini piñatas out, the whole thing with the piñata before. The mini piñatas, especially the way TJP reacted when he landed on him. I said, no, this is just nonsense at this point. And it's a shame, because tornado rules, tornado TD, tornado tag team matches are a lot of fun. I really like them. This wasn't my cup of tea. I feel bad saying this, but this was not my favorite episode of 205 Live in a while. Feel bad saying that because it's usually such a good show. But, you know, I thought the opening match was fine. Nothing spectacular, but good. Even at Aria Divari's showcase, I was like, well, there's not much to showcase here. It wasn't showcasing much anyway. And, you know, I thought the tornado tag match was okay. It was fine. Good action, but the silliness took me out of it. Let's keep that for Raw, gentlemen. All right, NXT now. Let's switch gears. Matt Riddle had a match against Punishment Martinez, making his NXT debut with some new awesome music. No, it is not. It is not his Slayer theme song or his Slayer-inspired theme. But this Ring of Honor stalwart is now, we knew he was signed. He's having his debut tonight against an old tag team partner of his, Matt Riddle. Two guys who know each other very well. I was expecting something that was going to be a lot of fun, and it was a lot of fun. There's some dueling. Gotta love Full Sail. There's some dueling, let's go Riddle, punishment chance in the crowd. So that's always cool. Get a lockup to start. Riddle pushes Martinez into the corner. Riddle avoids some kicks, goes for a sleeper hold, but Martinez drops right on his back. So Riddle can release the hold, but Riddle gets right back up and grabs him right back into a sleeper. Some strikes by Martinez, then a splash into the corner, misses. Riddle with some kicks right in the corner, flying forearm. He runs into the ropes again, but instead of connecting, he eats a cyclone kick by Martinez. Punishment comes back with some strikes. Riddle with a chop and Martinez with a huge clothesline. Riddle comes back with a flurry of strikes. A flurry of strikes. Chokehold by Martinez, but Riddle is out with some, gets out with some more striking. Big roundhouse kick by Riddle. Back elbows to Martinez, gets the bro mission locked in. Martinez tries to power out of it, but Riddle starts slapping his chest over and over again. He cinches the bro mission in, and Martinez taps. This was a nice, quick match, quick pace. Was quick both in time allotted, but the pacing was also very, very fast. And so that worked well. I enjoyed this match. Cyborg in the chat says, good match, but I'm not sure I like Martinez losing his debut match. You know, you look at NXT recently, you know, a lot of new call-ups, especially from the indies, come in and they lose their first matches. They just go out and lose their first matches. I think recent exceptions are Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, but Deonna Purrazzo lost her first NXT match. Mia Yim is an exception as well. Donovan Dijak or Dominik Dijakovic, he lost his first match as well. Those are the two examples that come into mind, but it's not, it hasn't been out of the ordinary. You know, it's not unique here. So maybe he did lose his match, but you know, he's over. Full Sail was completely behind him. And you know, if you're going to want to put Riddle over and have him work a 5-minute match, something really intense and great, you put him in the same ring with a guy who knows him so well, like Martinez, and look at what they did. Within 5 minutes, they worked a hell of a pace. It was fantastic. I really, really liked it. But then, after the match, as Matt Riddle is heading back up the ramp, he gets clobbered by my boy, my number one heel, Cassius Ohno. Just murders him from behind. And I am all for Ohno and Riddle getting into a proper slugfest. That is going to be some slap smacking, flippity flapping good time. We got a promo with Ricochet. I kind of found this one funny. Ricochet says, the interviewer asks Ricochet, he says, since you've arrived, you've pretty much been the highlight of every takeover. And I'm like, But that's not the part that made me laugh. He was asked then, how do you plan? You haven't been pinned on a takeover since your arrival. How do you plan to keep on winning? And Ricochet answers, well, I plan to go to the ring and defend my North American championship next week. So, I'm setting out an open challenge and William Regal can send whoever he wants. I'm like, okay, Ricochet, but how do you still plan on winning? Setting up open challenges might not be an easy way for you to maintain a winning record. It was a bit odd. I thought it was funny. He avoided the question. Maybe he's, can be, if anything, Ricochet has a great career as a politician when she's done. We get a promo package for Heavy Machinery. We've been working out weights and stakes. Otis Dozovich here, he was a little obnoxious. Tucker Knight was doing most of the promo with the highlights at the and Dozovich was sort of talking over him. I think he was meant to interject, but he was doing it with odd timing. It was weird. Apparently Bianca Belair is in the Fatal Four Four-Way match for the to determine the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship because she won a qualifying match at a live event recently, and I like that. I like live events having these little surprises attached to them. I think that's pretty cool. Next, we have Humberto Carrillo versus Raul Mendoza versus the Forgotten Son, Steve Cutler, and Wesley Blake, or as I like to call them, Sanity 2. We start off with Mendoza and Cutler. Cutler gets him down easily. Gets him down, but Mendoza battles back. He lands on his feet after a back body drop and gets an enziguri up on your boy Cutler. Double hip tosses by the babyface into a double team flip splash, I guess. Carrillo then is left in the ring, but he gets taken into the heels corner. Blake comes in with a chop, but Carrillo hits a big spinning jump kick on Blake. Mendoza with a top rope Rana then, and they go for that Hardy Boys offense, where they go for that Hardy Boys offense. I think it's Carrillo who gets on all fours. Mendoza runs, leaps off of Carrillo for, I guess, a leg lariat or something to that effect, kind of like the Hardy Boys. But instead, Blake catches Mendoza and dumps him on Carrillo. And that looked pretty cool. They do Forgotten Sons. They do a double team backbreaker over the knee to Mendoza. They do some dropping knees as well. I think it's still Blake. Yeah, Blake. I think it's still Blake was in the ring. Blake slingshots Mendoza off the top rope and into another over-the-knee backbreaker. Covers, only gets two. Mendoza battles out of a chin lock with a belly-to-back suplex. And he gets Carrillo in, who hits a flying cross body on Blake. Handspring back elbow. He does it a fantastic, I guess you'd call it an assisted flying arm drag. He leaps off one of the Forgotten Sons onto the other, drags him down. That was fantastic. He does the highest missile drop kick I have seen in a long time. The air that he got on that thing was ridiculous. But on top of that, He does a rolling standing moonsault, which was beautifully executed. He covers, but the pin is broken up. Mendoza goes for a dive onto the outside, onto Cutler, but he eats a forearm to the face. Blake then drives Carrillo into the mat. Double team Scorpion Death drop for the win. You know, if this was, so the Forgotten Sons win, if this was meant to be like a showcase match for the Forgotten Sons, mission not accomplished. I mean, other than showing that the Forgotten Sons are powerful guys that can pull out of a win out of their pocket whenever they do want or whenever they care. Gotta tell you, right here, Humberto Carrillo was amazing. He was so, so good. And the fact that they left them so much room to get so much great offense in, that's fantastic. I mean, it's a perfectly heel thing to do, to pull out a surprise loss, a surprise win like this over some explosive baby faces like this. I mean, it's a typical tactic, but I mean, we've seen Raul Mendoza before. We know he's really, really good. Carrillo, he shined tonight. That was fantastic. It was a great match where the Luchadors were completely over. Wouldn't say so much about the Forgotten Sons. It's a bit of weird booking as far as the Forgotten Sons go. But we'll keep an eye on them. But honestly, I don't know if the Forgotten Sons is going to work out, or at least I think at this point they're going to need a legitimate, really competitive tag team match to really sink their teeth into. We have Velveteen Dream, who's backstage in an interview, but he doesn't want to answer any questions until he snaps his fingers and the environment becomes purple and his theme starts playing. Then we can start asking him questions so he can answer them. What's next for the Dream? People are still talking about the Dream. People have been talking to Triple H about the Dream. Maybe what's next is Dream over, you know, is game over. I wouldn't be surprised if Velveteen Dream shows up in the Royal Rumble this year, to be honest. I really don't see them calling him up officially before then. Of course, this is WWE, so, you know, never say never. And they can do whatever they want. But so close now to the infamous road to WrestleMania, I don't see them doing any call-ups and saving whatever they might have in mind until they reach the Raw after WrestleMania, which is usually where they start pulling out these big surprise arrivals. I just don't see any NXT call-ups before that point. We have a quick promo with the Undisputed Era. The boys are backstage. They start to cut their promo, but Adam Cole is like, "All right, guys, are we sure we're safe? Did we lock the door before coming in?" Because the last time they did that kind of promo, they got assaulted by the War Raiders. And I thought that was a nice little detail tossed in there by your boy, Adam Cole. Bobby Fish basically he's talking to EC3. He says, "You know, you're under the impression I'm another guy, but I'm the guy you should be worried about. How deep do you need to go into the water before you realize it's infested with sharks?" All four of the boys. The Undisputed Era wonder what the other teams, what other teams are left, since apparently they've injured the War Raiders. All signs point to this being a working injury. I double checked the injury report over on Fightful.com. You can go check that out. There's no indication either Hansen or Rowe are injured. So I think it's just a way to keep War Raiders off TV maybe for a little while. Maybe there are some minor injuries that just need some time to heal up. I'm not quite sure. But there's no official injury report or that has been reported, because it's not on the Fightful injury report, which is maintained, curated by your boy Sean Ross Sapp, who recently defeated, well, in my eyes, defeated Melissa over from Fightful. In my eye, Sean is my winner. Next, we have our final match of the evening, but it was a fun match. I liked it. Dakota Kai versus Shayna Baszler. A very different Dakota Kai from their first encounter, which was months ago now, towards the start of earlier this year, I think. Yeah. Earlier this year. It feels weird. Shayna Baszler is coming out to the ring with Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. So this horsewoman thing, it's on. It is on. Kai and Baszler lock up. Baszler pushes Kai into the corner. Kai goes after her, but gets caught in a waist lock instead. Kai, however, takes Baszler down with a big running kick. She stomps her on the chest, and Kai is on fire. She is super aggressive. Baszler rolls to the outside, and Dakota Kai's not messing around. She goes right after her, goes for a running kick on the apron, but Baszler catches the leg and pulls her right into the post really hard. Baszler twists the arm. There's some joint manipulation going on. She goes for the elbow stomp, hearkening back to their first encounter where she dislocated Dakota Kai's shoulder. So she's setting her up again. She goes for the stomp, but Kai, she rolls out of the way and instead rolls Baszler up, covers her, but only gets two. Baszler goes right after the arm again, yanking it backwards. Baszler is so very much in control in this match. She's taunting, at this point of the match, I should say, taunting Kai with just, you know, very, just, you know, some boots to the head, just, you know, some taps. She low kicks Kai's leg, but Kai grabs her by the hair. This was really nasty. She grabs Baszler by the hair and starts kicking her on the head. That was something. You're not used to seeing Dakota Kai this aggressive, this angry. I liked it. Baszler's in the corner. She eats a running boot and the signature second running boot to the face. So Kai got her team kick offense in. However, in the meantime, Dakota Kai is selling that her arm is injured. She's not using it, but that's okay. She's the captain of team kick. So all she needs is her legs. Baszler battles back with a pair of knee strikes right to Dakota Kai's face. She covers her, but only gets two. Kai, on her end, battles back with another kick. Goes up top, hits a coup de grace on Baszler, covers her, and gets a 2.9. Baszler goes for a wrist lock on the injured arm. There's some top rope shenanigans that ensue. Step up in Enziguri by Baszler. And Baszler then hits a gut-wrench superplex, but she can't cover because it hurts her as well. Kai goes for some more kicks, but Baszler locks in the Kirifuda clutch. And Kai resists, but she taps out groggily. I loved the sell here by Kai. She's in the Kirifuda clutch, and she's locked in, and she's tapping, but it's not like one of these. She's like, oh, she's fading out. So she taps. Like, I thought that was really cool. It makes Shayna look monstrous. But the horsewomen are not done. Shayna may have won the match, but they're gonna teach this Kiwi a lesson. They start all three of them beating up on Dakota Kai, and that invokes Io Shirai, who runs to the ring. She tosses Baszler out. Double drop kick on Shafir and Duke, and they get flung to the floor. Baszler comes back. She goes for a kick, but it's blocked. She eats a palm strike for her troubles. And Duke and Shafir save Baszler for some more beatings. Io Shirai and Dakota Kai are left in the ring. They're telling the women, the horsewomen, hit the bricks. Get out of here. Fun angle. Fun match. I thought this was a fun match. Fun angle that they're setting up. They've already, you know, they've already set it up at TakeOver. This little feud between the horsewoman and Kairi Sane, Dakota Kai, and Io Shirai. I'm interested to see where this is going. We're going to keep on going. Fun little ending here. Interested to see where they're going to go. We get another Donovan Dijak. Dominic Dijakovic. That rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? But it's cool, giving him more hype packages, so they're preparing to do something with your boy Dijak. Next week, we're getting Bobby Fish versus EC3 and the North American title open challenge. So we're going to get that. So already should be a lot of fun. So we end with a main event segment. Tommaso Ciampa, the champ, comes to the ring. Said it once, and I'll say it again. One of the most fantastic parts of Tommaso Ciampa being NXT champion is the way he interacts with the belt. He gives it a name. He calls it Goldie. But you'll notice, I've mentioned this before, but I think it bears repeating because it was so glorious tonight again. When he kisses the belt, as he does it, he doesn't kiss the belt. He kisses his nameplates. And when he raises the title above his head and he's looking at the belt, he's not looking at the belt. He's looking at the nameplates. It's all in his details, man. He's so good. He's playing the narcissist perfectly. Says, I can't say it enough. He says he's a man of his word. He ended the fairy tale. He ended the mystique. And he turned the dream into a nightmare. And he's still champion. You people refuse to believe in me. Accept me as a champion. A lot of talk about you people promos these days, right? In the WWE, they're going back to the well on those. With varying levels of success, Daniel Bryan pulled quite possibly the best You People promo of all time last night on SmackDown. Dean Ambrose with his You People promos, maybe not quite as successful. But Tommaso Ciampa here, it's hard not to, the You People thing is, it's not just him cutting promos, it's part of his gimmick. That's always what it's been about. When he come back, when he came back after attacking Gargano earlier this year, and he come out to complete silence and he just get booed out of the building. He tried to talk but couldn't say a thing. The people did indeed turn on him. So it's not just him cutting a You People promo to get some heel heat. This is part of his story. It makes sense for him to spit on the people because it's been the main arc of his entire character development. So there you go. So he says, yeah, you people don't believe in me and you, the voice of NXT, and we cut to Mauro Ranallo, who's sitting there stone-faced, you know, it's like, God, I hate this guy, you know, kind of thing. He says, you, the voice of NXT, you don't believe in me, but Mamma Mia, here I am. That was so well executed. It was so good. His opening promo was really, really good. It says, children will grow up and will study my work. I am not the flavor of the week, the month. I am the 2018 Sports Entertainer of the Year, and I will also be the best sports entertainer for 2019. And Aleister Black's music interrupts. And he comes to the ring and he has a mic. And he says he absorbed. Yes, he says he absorbed Johnny Gargano. He absolved Johnny Gargano of his sins, sins that you created, Puppet Master. I'm like, I like this. He says, you're not really a champion. I see the original sin in you, and I will absolve you of it too, because I invoke my right to challenge you for the NXT title at TakeOver Phoenix. But Gargano's music hits, and Johnny comes to the ring, and he says, first and foremost, you and me, Alistair, we're not done. Thank you for absolving me of my sins, but I say it's over when I say it's over. I'll drink as much Diet 7-Up as I want. Says it's over when I think it's over. Ciampa says, he's standing aside from this. Alistair and Johnny Gargano they're staring each other down and right in the middle of the ring. They're face to face with each other. Ciampa says I love it when you leave Johnny wrestling in the back and you become Johnny Badass. And of course, what do you think the audience starts chanting? Ciampa says, I'm sure you hear, he tells Aleister Black, I'm sure you've heard that when Johnny gets fixated on something, he refuses to let it go. And it looks like Gargano is fixated on you right now, big guy. The champ gets it. In the champ's opinion, it should have been you two in that steel structure. And, you know, I'm just talking here. You know, I'm just shooting the breeze here. I would want to finish this thing the right way. And you guys should do it in a steel cage. And Ciampa's riling up the audience. Says, is this what you guys want? Wouldn't you guys want to see them finish this here? And then Gargano. See, he played Johnny Gargano like a fiddle here. He knows how Johnny is. Even if Johnny is in, you know, heel tweener world right now, he's still the same Johnny. He knows what buttons to press. He knows how to pluck them. He knows how to play them. He just made Johnny Gargano go off the rails. Yeah, is that what you people want? Is that what you want? Well, that's fine. I'm not afraid of you. And Aleister Black explodes in a raging promo, raging reaction. He's on fire. This is the kind of promo that Aleister Black needs to cut more often. You know, where he's on the brink, where he's mad. This is again something I've said before. Aleister Black's part of the reason I feel Aleister Black lost a lot of his mystique was because he started cutting promos, and his promos have always been very plain, very average. His delivery is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. His voice is very calm, but it just lacked. It's when you see the guy with the tattoos, the hair, he's tall, he's athletic, he's a striker, and he starts talking and literally sounds like you and I. Kind of chips away at the mystique. So this was good to see him like in another, like possessed, you know, filled with passion and rage, pure emotion. That's exactly what we got here. So that was good. He says, Johnny wrestling is dead. I killed him, and said, I will fight you right here. I'll fight you anywhere. Johnny says, well, I can fight you in the parking lot. How did that turn out for you last time, Aleister? I took you out for 3 weeks. We still don't know how Johnny pulled it off. How did Johnny Gargano take Aleister Black out for 3 weeks? Or 3 months, whatever it was. Saying 3 weeks, but it was longer than that. Still don't know. Gargano avoids a black mass that sort of came out of nowhere, and he starts heading back up the ramp. And Ciampa is very satisfied with what he just did. He's on the side of the ring. He's chuckling, and he eats a black mass for his troubles. And that's how we ended that episode of 205, not 205, NXT. Was a good show. I thought there was there were a couple of fun matches on this. Some great performances. Humberto Carrillo really stood out for me. That was surprising. The women put on a great match. Matt Riddle and Punishment Martinez. Fun match. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the 205 Live NXT Recap Show. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mr. Warren Hayes. Follow me on Twitter @Mr. Warren Hayes. Thank you very much for tuning in. And I'll see you next time.